We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Roto Grinders today. I'm Jordan Cooper, a.k.a. Blender Ed, Blender HD. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Wednesday, March 20th. We'll be talking some NCAA college basketball. Hit that thumbs up button on your way in the door. Hit the subscribe button if you're new here. Hit the notification bell to know when we go live. We're talking college basketball. We talk about it with one person. I was told yesterday by Tim. We did NHL yesterday. Tim said that out of all the people here at Roto Grinders, at Scores and Odds, at Spike Week, right? All the better collective properties. Tim said that out of anything in any sport, I know Steve is good at NASCAR, right? You know, Noto, great at golf. But he basically said everyone should tune in tomorrow and do whatever Eric Beinfors says for college basketball. Just blindly, it doesn't matter. Because I said, I don't watch college basketball. I'm in Louisville. It's huge here, right, between UK and U of L. I'm originally from New York. I don't really know college basketball. I fill out a March Madness bracket when it's like the free play crap that they throw in some sports book or something. I do some top-down betting where I don't even have to know what the, just as long as I get the closing line value. So is Tim right that whatever you say, like, just be the gold standard and just don't question it. Just if Eric says it, do it.
Well, no, absolutely not. Shout out to Tim. I love Tim. I appreciate the kind words, but no, like I said, yeah, that's very nice. But I think, I love basketball. I've always loved college basketball. So I just have that kind of inherently in me, but I actually think like, it's kind of a fun conversation on a show like this where I've actually gotten more passionate about it over the years, kind of as like NBA is getting harder. NFL is obviously very, very difficult. Both DFS, sports betting, and prop markets, everything are getting more efficient in the kind of major sports. College basketball kind of lags behind. And there's you know, approaching 400 Division I college basketball teams. You know, there's not enough, like some of these teams don't even have news coverage. So there are edges to grind that I think may eventually go away at some point, but certainly have not gone away yet. And then from the NCAA tournament, you know, starting tomorrow, I think that DFS players, I talked to Christy about this, Christy Metzger, we have a serious show for Roto Grinders over the weekends. And we talked on Sunday and we both kind of agreed, like, if you're a DFS player, like you, and like the people listening to this, even if you don't know a lick about college basketball, I think you have a substantial edge in your bracket pools. You might have a better edge than I do, because I know I'm going to have inherent bias about some of these teams because I do follow it very closely. Even though I'm using some of the same principles that DFS players are using to try to write game theory, bro, the bracket pools and the Calcuttas and all that kind of stuff. I think that the people like listening to this can get a huge, huge edge. You got to know a couple of like small little angles about the tournament, I think, injury situations, things that have changed or whatever, because like some of the analytical models in college basketball are not updating for players, you know, who are on the court or have been on the court lately type of situation. But man, the game theory edge, the March Madness is ultimately a game theory game. Like this is like baseball DFS or something, you're really game theorying this as opposed to like predicting the future. And I do think there are some little micro edges that we can grind where maybe the market is just flat out off about some certain teams or certain matchups. And so kind of bringing all that together is what I love about it.
Well, this time of the year, you got multiple choices. If you want to get involved with NCAA college basketball, we got here on Roto Grinders, the NCAA tournament betting preview, tips and predictions from our experts, where Eric is one of them. We also have college basketball projections. We got all the same type of stuff here. We got Prize Picks, Underdog, everything. So whether you could play DFS contests on DraftKings or FanDuel, you could play the Pick'em stuff, you could do props, you could just straight sides and totals. The March, obviously, the everyone has their brackets, and there's a strategy to all. Now, during the regular season, I'm assuming, Eric, that the tournament, right, this time of year, it's, would you consider it very similar to how I, coming from my specialty, was always soccer DFS? That this is like World Cup time, where I'm making money in DFS contests all throughout, 12 months out of the year, but you don't get as much recreational action. You don't get as the GPPs are filling with a lot of sharper players that aren't making huge mistakes, that once the World Cup comes around every 4 years, it's like, okay, let's see that bottom 20-30%.
Nobody talked to me. This is my time. Yeah, this is
right,
my time.
Right. And during the World Cup, they play like 3-4 games every day for 3 weeks. And it's like I'm not even paying attention to like baseball or anything. It's like, nope, soccer. It's every day showdowns, because especially when the U.S. is in the World Cup, like it just gets oversized. Like this is the time where everyone in this country cares about soccer. And then they go into a shell for 4 years, enough so that it actually starts filling DraftKings contests. Is that the same when it comes to DFS? Like, are many people like tomorrow? It's going to be tomorrow's slate is going to have God knows how many, whatever many games. That are those contests going to be like way softer than a typical Saturday college basketball DFS slate?
Yeah, not even close. It might be. You would be able to speak to soccer like better than I, and some other people, who grind some of the lesser sports would be able to speak to sports that I'm not aware of. But from the major sports, the college sports, NBA, NHL, whatever, I think probably tomorrow, but certainly this weekend, is maybe the softest DFS game that like is in existence nowadays. Because I think there is just something about the whole March Madness element that everybody loves it, right? Like my mother-in-law is asking me for bracket picks, and like everybody gets tuned in to March Madness. There is just this allure of this particular event. And so if you play DFS, even as a very recreational player, like it, you filled out a bracket. You feel like you have like something that and you toss your teams into this lotto tournament. And I really do like the difficulty of college basketball DFS has definitely gotten a lot higher because of exactly what you said with your soccer example. On at the beginning of the year, it's great. And then the middle of the season, you get to the heart of conference play and all that stuff. And it's the same 12 of us or whatever, you know, playing against each other, competing for the $2,000 top prize in the main tournaments. And, you know, it's tough. It's very tough. It's kind of just a lot of exchanging money, and you're playing, you have to change your game because you know, you're playing against the really sharp players as opposed to tomorrow. Like it's a much different game because you're playing against thousands of people who, you know, they don't know who. I'll shout out to our friend Andy Means. We were talking about a guy from Oakland tomorrow named Jack Golke. He has attempted 335 shots this season. 327 of them are three-pointers. He does not take two-point field goal attempts. And so just like they don't know who the hell that is, right? They're like, I picked Kentucky in my bracket. Who is this random white dude from Oakland who just hit like 12 three-pointers against Kentucky? Like, and you have such an edge specifically here, I think, because shout out Tuttle. You know, Dan Gasper, Mr. Tuttle 05, doing the projections for college basketball. He's done an awesome job. Like, I know, you know, I'm sure he knows some about college basketball. From what I know from Tuttle, he's not like grinding, you know, tons and tons of college basketball. He's just really good at the projection aspect of all this. And he's done an awesome job here, especially down the home stretch, putting together college basketball projections. So I know those are up in Lineup HQ. They look good. So if you just come in, you bring a little bit of your other sport expertise, you bring a little bit of your game theory element, and look at what we got going on here at RotoGrinders. Like, I legitimately believe that everyone that's like playing to grind out profits or you know, you want to have fun too. But tomorrow, college basketball is like the best day you can play.
If you've never played college basketball DFS, but you've played NBA DFS, is there any general change that because of its college, is there any, because of lower scoring games or like, is there, I don't want to, I mean, obviously there may be people tuning in that have never played any form of basketball DFS, but we're assuming that if you're watching the RotoGrinders YouTube channel, that you've at least dabbled in NBA DFS. It is basketball, but are there any nuances of college basketball because of the rules, the times, how they play, that you're more used to? Oh, in NBA DFS, I would definitely not do this, but in college, I don't mind doing this, and vice versa.
Yeah, there's a couple different things. The very first one is kind of what you hinted at with like a matchup related thing in the NBA, right? You're getting, there are slow teams and there are fast teams, but generally speaking, every game is going to have 200 and something points. Right. It's going to be, well, other than like a Hawks Pacers game or whatever, like at most, you know, 99% of NBA games are going to be close enough. Some defenses are better than others, but generally speaking, a guy with certain rates, right, and a certain projection is going to come within a certain, you know, amount of points on one side or the other of what our expectation is. There's a lot less variance in college. The difference between a, say, a good matchup or good game environment and a bad matchup or bad game environment is like, you can almost not put it into words. It is crazy. So we'll take a Kentucky. The Kentucky plays the Oakland team that I was mentioning before. You take a Kentucky. They play at one of the fastest paces in the country. They play some of the worst defense in the country. They score like crazy, which pushes the other team to continue. They're playing constant games. Like, they're dropping 100 every other game, and they only play 40 minutes as opposed to 48. They're scoring 100 points, like, frequently, very frequently. And the opponent is scoring 80 or 90 points, sometimes more than them, because Kentucky's defense is very bad. Then you, if anybody tuned in last night and you watched the Virginia-Colorado State game, they were 7 minutes into the game and it was 4-2. It is like Virginia had played the slowest tempo in the country and they're putrid on offense. So it's like, but they have an elite defense, a top 10 defense. So like the difference between the scoring environments for fantasy, I think, go a little bit underappreciated, because a lot of what the casual person goes back and looks at, what has this person done, right? Let's game log watch and look at, oh, this guy 25, 25, 28, 32 or whatever. And then they play Virginia. And it's like, yeah, but that 25 against the team from the, you know, the SWAC is not going to translate to what he's going to do against Virginia, and vice versa. The game environments, I think, are really, it's one of the things that have been for me still, as people have gotten better at projections, I think some of the biggest edges and just the variance in general. is mega, mega high. These are college kids. Some of them are 18 years old. Some of them are much older, but some of them are 18 years old. They're not NBA players, right? If you get a wide open corner three from a college kid, you still have to cross your fingers and pray to God he makes it. You get a wide open corner three from any competent NBA player, and it's like a 65%, you know, make chance. They miss more free throws, right? They miss more layups. All there's just so much more variance, which leads to like the whole game theory element of like, okay, if I got bad game environment, high ownership, but good projection, you know, there's a lot more ways to fade things, I think, in college basketball than there are in NBA. And then the other part of that is you play two halves, 40 minutes, but you only get five fouls. You don't get six fouls like you do in the NBA. So what that leads to, a lot of minutes are important, as we know, in any basketball sport, because you need to be out there. Guys with foul trouble happen so much more frequently. Like, it's the single most tilting thing you experience in college basketball, for sure. It's like you play some $8,500 guy. He's in a great spot. Two fouls in the first 3 minutes, and he doesn't play again for the rest of the first half, and your whole slate is sunk. Because they're like, the NBA guy might be able to make it up. You know, he might make it up over the course of it, even if he gets two quick fouls. In college, you know, some coaches absolutely will not play a player with two fouls in the first half. So foul trouble creates an extra level of variance.
It always seems odd to me. At some point, some math person is going to change the foul trouble. Well, this guy's in foul trouble. He's our best player. We're going to sit him so that when he comes back in the game in the next half, we're down by 16.
Yeah,
and then he ends the game with three fouls, right? Like, yes. Why don't you just keep your best players in the game when you need it? And but just you may not need them at the end. You may do need them at the end. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
DFix says in the chat that because of the fact that the game environments could be drastically good or drastically bad, it means you could stack a little bit more in college basketball.
Yep. Because a game environment can bring along some of these guys, right? Like, right. You know, and there is a little more, like the correlation aspect is not a big deal, right? But like assist three-pointer, rebound, block, you know, transition, you know, the game environment. Well,
it's also the fact of you may have a ton of games on a slate. I mean, you may have 10 games on a slate and you may have a bunch of bad game environments and then one 174 total. And it's just like, I'd rather just play like four guys from this game than try to piece all these other things together. I mean, the same exists in NBA as well. I mean, there are some games that, you know, you look at some of these Pacers games and go, half the guys are out, so they're running a seven-man rotation, and the total is 238 and a half, and it's like, I'm just going to play as many people from this game as possible.
That is a thing these next 2 days as well. I put in my tags into Lineup HQ this morning, at least my first initial wave for tomorrow. And you'll see that each of the next 2 days, there are two games, one on each day. I mentioned the Kentucky-Oakland game, which is just like approaching 170 as a total. And then Alabama plays Charleston on Friday, which currently I believe is the highest total in the history of the NCAA tournament in the 170s and probably rising still. Two of the fastest teams shoot tons and tons and tons of threes. They kind of subscribe to that, you know, that new wave analytical model. And they, but to your point, like we have a couple of those games. Tomorrow's a great one. There are what I would call two games that stand out above the rest, Kentucky and Oakland, and then Kansas and Samford, because Samford plays really, really fast. They press, they shoot a ton of threes. They play what their coach, it's called Bucky Ball. Again, kind of a forward thinking, play fast, press, chuck a bunch of threes. And they play Kansas, who has been pretty vulnerable this year and is without probably their best player. So you have kind of that, like you said, the Pacers element where it's fast paced game. You know, teams playing fast, teams cheap on the Samford side. And then there's also guys out boosting the projections of the other players.
Right. Tim says in the chat, Tuttle has done great with projections for college. But DFix asks another question because you don't see it here in Lineup HQ. Tips for estimating ownership. Because especially, you're going to get a lot of people that may not be playing. Like during the... I mean, I can attest to it very similar in soccer that I'm pretty good at guesstimating general ownership on players on a week to week basis. But the World Cup comes around, and boy, I go, how did this guy end up being 12% owned? He would be like 2% on any other slate. And then a guy that's like de facto, like if this was any other slate, this guy would be like 70% owned. And he's like 50% owned or 45%, which is still the highest owned on the slate. But it's like who, what are these lineups that look like that don't have these guys in them?
Yep.
Is it the type of thing where, I mean, I default to assume that for the most part, the projections are somewhat efficient, that if a guy, you know, if a guy is 3K underpriced based on our projections and you're getting 100% of them in like every run of 150 lineups, it's probably going to be decently. I mean, I don't know what the number is, but it's not going to be low, right?
I've mostly struggled with the exact number for sure, but really what I've, especially as Tuttle's really gotten locked into, like Tim says, as the season has gone on and as we've gotten, you know, into conference tournament play and stuff, Tuttle's really done a great job with the projections. I've just used those, you know, pull those in and kind of put some numbers to those projections, like very little minor tweaks of things like, you know, like how they've performed lately type of situation. Like Tuttle has
Yeah, I know they project well, but people don't like clicking on this guy.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But he played 12 minutes last game cause he was in foul trouble. And then the game before that, he shot 1 for 12 and it's like, yeah, those little things, you know, do factor. So just like little minor tweaks, but basically the projections from Tuttle, he's really got them down really well. And I think I glanced through so far the ones for tomorrow. And I think pretty much, you know, sort by point per dollar, right? Go by point per dollar. And like you said, run some lineups, run a couple 150 sets and see what you get. And you're going to pretty much, the exact numbers are going to be different. What I have found is in the big lottos, it's a lot more of the exact thing that you said. The guys who I would expect to be the absolute peak highest ownership, like me as more of, you know, a single entry, 3-entry max player is like, I cannot not play this guy. Like this guy has to be in the lineup, you know? So me, like you said, 75% ownership projection type thing is 50 or 45 to your point. So I'm going to be playing the lottos a lot more over the course of the next couple of days, because I think that's where the really big edge is. Whereas like in the 222 or whatever, or any higher stakes stuff, those guys will be efficiently owned. You know, they might be 85% owned or something like that, where that now it's a little tougher conversation, but the lottos are just, yeah, you can directionally accurate using the projections, but there's always a give or take on exact number.
So let's talk about other things outside of DFS involving the tournament. I could pat myself on the back that the last time that I was in a March Madness pool, it was at my poker club back. I mean, this is what year I won. Eric, I won the March Madness pool at my poker club 3 years in a row.
Oh my gosh.
3 years in a row. And by the third year, everyone knew what I was going to do, and I won anyway. And I got made fun of because it was like typically it was like somewhere between 18 and 22, like somewhere around 20 people, right? And I didn't really watch college basketball, and I just went and just took all the favorites the whole way through.
Mm-hmm.
And just took all the favorites all the way through while people were taking 12 seeds against 5 seeds, and, you know, people had 6 seeds in the final four. Unless there's a change in the scoring system, like to me, there's no incentive to not do that in smaller field stuff. I mean, this is before DFS. This is just, you know, I was a good poker player because I'm good at figuring out games.
Mm-hmm.
So you look and you go, well, if everyone else is going to try to figure out which 12 seed makes it to the Elite Eight, I mean, I only have to beat 20 people. I mean, like the chances are someone, oh, I got that 14 seed over a 3 seed. It's like, you got 5 points for that.
Right. I know.
And then they lost in the next round. So it's like, So great, you got 5 more points than me, but I got like 65 points in this round because I'm the one seed there and you had some asshole team in there. So for March Madness brackets, would you agree with me that if you're playing 10 of your friends, that unless and they're schmucky friends, right? Unless there's some compelling reason to pick a 9 seed over an 8 seed for some nuance.
Right, an injury, like right? There's an injury right. Or something like that, yeah.
Right, but I'm just saying, if you don't know anything, like me, I fill out these March Madness brackets on like DraftKings and Bet365 and whatever, and there's an incentive because of the payout structure to get weird, but my expected value on these things are very positive. So me just filling out all the favorites, like what's the worst case scenario? I'll be one of the, I'll get $3. It's like, okay, so give me, you know how long it took me to fill this out?
Yeah.
30
That's
seconds.
Good hourly. So that's a good hourly.
Right. Yeah. Right. So give me the $3. I'm not looking at it. And it's just the final score of the game, right? They like how many points? I'm like 160. That sounds good. Right. That sounds like a normal score, right? I've UConn winning it all. Mm-hmm. Like boring as hell. But like for the 2 seconds it takes me to fill it out, that's what I would do. Are there any March Madness bracket strategies? I know that people are gonna have to get their brackets in soon if they're doing it today, mm-hmm. right? And have you joined any of these types of pools? Are there different scoring system where if the scoring system was this way, then you're much more incentivized to do X, talk about that. Cause I don't know anything other than the standard scoring, small field stuff. And then just randomly doing crap. And, FanDuel says, oh, you're freely entered in this thing. I don't want to not fill it out. I want to at least get my 72 cents in expected value.
Right. Exactly. No, it's exactly what you said. And it goes back to, like you mentioned, like being able to figure out games, and like that's why we do this stuff. Like you mentioned early spike week, so I started a best ball site, right? Why I got so deep into best ball is because it's a new game with new rules and new scoring and diving into it has nothing to do with the fact that I love sports. I mean, I guess it technically does, but like I'm figuring out because I think there are edges in there are rules and there are the way things are scored in this particular game that my opponents don't think about. Like they are just going in and they're saying, I know fantasy football. I'm going to draft the best players and I'm going to win this thing. And I'm like, I can specifically get a straight up edge just by reading the rules and thinking about how they apply to someone. And that absolutely exists with March Madness brackets. I believe that the general person legitimately does not know how they're scored. Like go to ESPN or whatever, right? And fill out the basic bracket there. I don't think people understand how they're scored. You are not incentivized to pick upsets. You're not incentivized to pick a team who is less likely to win than their opponent. Generally speaking, from a point scoring format, right? That's not to do with the, any game theory elements or whatever. You are rewarded for picking winners. You get the same amount of points, whether the 16 seed wins or the 1 seed wins. It doesn't matter. So why would you ever pick a team that's a 25 and a half point underdog, to win in the first round? Because you're going to lose. Your bracket's going to go to shit in the first game. And you don't get any extra upside by picking, like in DFS and stuff, there's all these angles of extra upside by picking the low owned player. The low owned, low probability, lowly projected team, there's no benefits to doing it. And yet all of our opponents cannot help themselves with, right? You hear it all week on ESPN and CBS and whatever, like a 12 seed beats a 5 every year, right? They say a 12 seed beats a 5. The new one is a team from the first 4 always wins another game, right? And it's like, so last night we had Colorado State win. The first 4 has only been around for a handful of years.
Right.
First of all.
That's what I was wondering. It's like, how long? That's not even that large of a sample size.
Yeah. It's like the betting trends thing. You know what I mean? It's like so-and-so is 4-0. On opening days when the sun is shining, and the birds are chirping and all that kind of stuff. That's what the first four is, but that's the new one, right? It's like, well, And what's terrible is I do like Colorado's playing tonight, and I kind of like them to win a game if they can sneak through the first four. So I'm kind of backing that notion. But it's like these kinds of things that everyone falls into, and they say, nope, I love this 12 seed. Nope, I love, right? I imagine Kansas plays tomorrow. They play Samford. They're missing their best player, first team all conference, Kevin McCullough, like hugely important. You're going to hear every media outlet is going to be saying, oh no, Kansas is in trouble. Kansas is in trouble. And everybody, and the line's going to come down towards Samford.
All the lines have come down on that already. I mean, dude, I mean, yep. The totals come down, the spread has come down, everything's come down on that.
And so all the people who think they're smart in your bracket pool are going to pick Samford, right? And they're going to pick a 12 seed, and they're going to pick, you know, say Colorado wins the first four tonight, they're going to pick Colorado to win the next game. And it's like, all these things are not actually beneficial for you, like just in a vacuum. It's not from the scoring format, the rules of the game. It actually doesn't help you to do those things. And everyone is doing them, and they're fairly predictable, right? A, ESPN has percentages up. You can go find some like projected ownership on bracket pools. They may not apply to your pool, but like a lot of this stuff is predictable. And so another one I'll mention is New Mexico is an 11 seed playing Clemson, a 6 seed, and New Mexico is favored by multiple points as the 11 seed. The committee just screwed this one up. They left New Mexico in at an 11, but everyone knows that. Every podcast you listen to or every bracket you see, you know, Jay Billis fill out or whatever, they have New Mexico because everybody thinks New Mexico is better. And it's like, well, it's still a coin flip game. You know, it's still a complete coin flip, but probably in some brackets, 75% of people are going to pick New Mexico. And it's like, that is really outsized to the probability of them winning a game. And it's those little spots where you can really gain your edges, but everyone thinks they gain their edge on, I'm going to pick the right 12 seed. Right. I'm going to pick the right 13 seed.
Yeah. But the way that you get an edge like that, you have to pick the right 12 seed to win the national championship. Right. Like,
yes.
Like if you could do that, you've won. If you're the person that picked the 12 seed to go all the way to the championship game. Like to me, that's how you should view it, as unless you, even if you're like a college basketball guru, you're not even filling it out for strategic purposes. But just like if you're going to predict an upset in the first two or three rounds, you have to go, okay, I think this team beats the other team, and they go to the final four. Like if you go, okay, this 12 seed beats some people. Oh, this 16 seed beats the first seed. Like if it's not, and they go to the final four, you might as well just pick the favorite, right? Because the points and most of these games,
it's all back weighted.
It's all back. Like now, let's say Eric, you're playing in a bracket where it gives you extra points for the upset.
This is where the fun. Yeah. Now this is the fun.
Then stuff starts to even out, but you still at that point have to go and they make the final four, because in those types of pools, and I used to play in those pools also, that depending on the amount of entries, it incentivizes you to not take number one seeds, because it's possible. Like, for instance, if you could predict, let's just even say a fourth seed to win the national championship, that in and of itself, you may end up with four, the final four, and you're missing three out of the four of them, except for that four seed, and that four seed wins, you're going to get so many points, because the lower the seed is, the more points you get for wins.
Mm-hmm.
And that the national title game is the most amount of points, and based on your scoring system, that some person that got that all four final four teams right, but you have the four seed winning, may make up for the fact that you don't even have the other three out of, like, the scoring gets so exponential there. Now, I don't know what types of rules are out there,
yeah,
but I know there are pools that give a multiplier for what seed it is. And if it's a large contest, my attitude would be, if you have a an opinion on a two seed, a three. I mean, we're not talking about eight seeds, yep, right? We're not talking about real long shots. But then I would fill out that bracket with that team all the way to the Final Four, and then just fill out all the favorites for the rest of it. Like, the only way that you should not be picking upsets is if you think UConn, if you're like, UConn's winning the national yep title, it's like, okay, then you have to do, you have to make up some points where other people are going to get some upsets, right? But if you, it's one of those things, Eric, like in DFS, where in MLB, I'm going to play on a 14-game MLB slate. I'm going to play a 1% owned stack. It's like, well, at that point, just play the two chalk pitchers. I mean, just, yep, just play the highest projected lineup at that point.
Yep.
And then if you're like, I want to play the 8 million percent owned Braves, it's like, okay, well, you got to find some 1% off one-offs in order to win this.
Yeah, Ronaldo Lopez, Ronaldo Lopez, and, you know, the Pirates catcher, come on down.
Right. So would you agree with me that
yeah,
in those types uh-huh of things, that's kind of more of the mindset you should have?
100%. And I much prefer, because I like to galaxy brain and like to get, you know, it's also just like why people do the upset thing is like, it's more fun. Like, and you feel like, right. It's like people love, I talk about this in like a lot of it related to basketball, but it relates to all these sports. A lot of times people would rather be right than make money is like one of my,
Eric, all the 3 years in the poker, that my March Madness pool. Like the first weekend, it's like it's people touting their 14 seed being yeah the 3 seed.
Told you, and it's, a guy told you, right, they were.
I told you, and then 3 weeks thing later, I'm collecting all the money.
Yeah, like, right. Exactly.
I don't care.
Congrats on those 2 points you got on that 14 right seed that you won. I won the several thousand dollars in this pool, right? And that's what we talk about it in best ball all the time. But it's applicable to all these games where like people would rather that feeling, that endorphin rush, whatever, that psychological effect of being right changes the way people play these games. And so that is extremely impactful, but that, like, you can take advantage of that, right? And it's so easy to take advantage of it in the general bracket format or whatever. But that's why I like some of these other games, and there continue to be like more and more games. We do a team draft and a player draft and stuff for some different with some high school buddies and things that I have. I generally prefer survivor type contests, actually. You know, you pick a new team to win every single day. Some of them have pick a team to cover every single day, which is extremely difficult. Calcutta's are a ton of fun, where you have the, you know, Derek Clark. Shout out Derek Clark, our wizard mobile developer here at RotoGrinders. I will never forget when Virginia lost as a 1 seed to the 16 seed. We had a Calcutta at RotoGrinders, and Derek, you know, he built like a model to say like how much to buy teams for. And Virginia was the best team in the country that year, and he didn't buy any other teams. He spent a bunch of money only on Virginia. It was the only team he bought in the whole Calcutta, and they lost to the 16 seed in the first round, and he was done. But I find the strategy around that kind of stuff, like how much should teams go for? When do I hop off the ones, twos, three seeds or whatever and start to spray and pray right at the lower seeds? All that kind of stuff, I think, is a ton of fun. But I wanted to just quickly to your Devin knows in the chat, the Calcutta model. But the like seeding, you know, seed times win or whatever, seed times round or whatever scoring that you'll get that isn't like the ESPN bracket scoring. I definitely find that to be a lot more fun. And I think you can do some funky things that you can't do in these other brackets, right? Like you said, you're not incentivized to go crazy. So last year, I'll give an example, very unique. I don't have an example of this year, but Memphis played Florida Atlantic as an 8. That was an 8-9 matchup last season. I thought they were both undervalued, like in the market. I mean, basically any model would have agreed with me. Memphis was like a top 15 team as an 8 seed last year. I forget what 1 seed they were playing, but they were matched up with whoever won would get a 1 seed who I also thought was overvalued. And you know, it was a brutal spot for that 1 seed, whichever one of the teams those they had to play. And so in Calcutta, I just bought both of them. And it was like, I just bought both teams. And I said, like you said, this was my like, okay, I see this team going to the Final Four or going to the national championship. It's just, I don't know which one of these, whichever one of these two it is. These are like four seeds, but they're 8-9 seeds. And they, God damn it, they happen to play each other. And so I'm like, I'm just buying both of them. FAU comes back and beats Memphis and then makes the Cinderella run to go. They go to the Final Four. And that was like, I screwed up so much other stuff, but it didn't matter because like you said, I made the one bet. I said, this is my one thing. This is my, I did exactly what you said. This is an 8-9 game. This team can make a run to the Final Four or win the national championship. That's my bet. In my brackets, I had Memphis. So all my brackets were horrible, but I saved face by, you know, covering my bases with FAU, but I did exactly like what you outlined. And specifically it was, of course, I did it in other bracket contests, but also in the like seed times round or whatever scoring that you'll get. Like you're just so incentivized to make that one kind of stand and then, kind of play the chalk around it exactly like your DFS example.
Props and pick 'em for the NCAA tournament. Is there anything, I know you're betting on college basketball throughout the course of the season. I'm going to assume that limits are going to be higher.
Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. because I mean, dude, I mean, my college basketball betting, I mean, if I go in, I think over the course of the season, I'm up a couple hundred bucks, maybe. I think, let me check. I'm going to just, I have to go back. Oh, I have to go. It's all separated by year. So let's see. There and NCAA. Okay. About $1,000.
That's good.
And I just bet based on Steam. So like,
yeah,
you're not going to be able to bet based on Steam, I believe, in the college tournament because the information is all,
yeah,
is all out there. I mean, like when I'm betting on Tuesday night McNeese State matchups, right? like, yeah, I could see that, you know, you could get 4 or 5 points of closing line value on a total. Like you can't do that in the most, I mean, the more eyes that are on it, the more efficient the market's going to be, the more liquidity is going to be. Are there any things that people should possibly look at, especially when it comes to the prop markets though? Because a lot of, throughout the course of the normal season, there are no McNeese State props.
Right.
Like there's no, like, I can't, there's no, like the props available during in a state where you can even bet props, which I can in Kentucky.
Yeah. Right? I'm in Illinois and you can, and you're exactly right. They are not available. It's all the power conference teams.
Right. So only like you on a Saturday, you may only have 9 or 10 games that even have props available. They're typically TV games and stuff like that.
Top 25 generally. Yep.
Right. It's, to say that they're inefficient is an understatement, is a very big understatement, but I also think that betting them blindly based on projections, you could get into a lot of trouble also because something could look, I mean, these prop numbers may come out a day or two early and news, I mean, it's just like, it's very similar to NBA. I view it very much more similar to NBA DFS. And with the news of like, oh yeah, I'm going to take Dame Lillard's under points because I look at the injury report and everything's fine. Mm-hmm. And then like 6 hours later, Giannis isn't playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, well my prop is screwed. I mean, like obviously the number is going to go completely against me.
Yep.
College basketball, that shit happens all the time. And the difference is there's no official injury report and there are times where you literally bet a prop on a guy and then I check and go, that game was earlier today. Let me check. And the guy didn't even play. Like, it just didn't no, he was out for that. Like, how did no one, but no one knew. And the answer is no one knew. it's not like NBA where it's like, okay, we actually, like, yeah, injury, like, oh, he's going to sit like 5 minutes before game time. Like, this is the type of stuff where like college football, it happens, I know, where there's a 38% on running back that literally DNPs.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's 100%. The type of, so to me, if you're betting on props and pick them, I would surmise, tell me if I'm wrong, it's the NCAA tournament. More eyes are on it. If they're a good player on their college basketball team, they're probably playing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. I think the NCAA tournament is the small caveat to that. But if you want to grind this, you know, like me and others are doing and Tuttle is doing for the projections and DFS and betting and everything, it's a doozy. It what you just outlined happens all the time. And you have to be, similar to NBA, you have to be at your computer, you know, leading up to, and there are some good Twitter accounts to follow, but not everyone can always catch everything. And you got to be feverishly refreshing Twitter searches to pray that someone out there has said, oh, so-and-so is in street clothes, you know, 10 minutes before tip. So A, there's no injury reports, and B, the starting lineups don't come out anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes before the game starts. So that's just regular season. I suspect it will be fine for the NCAA tournament. One, again, caveat to a caveat is the start times. So this is mostly DFS, but the start times of games are projected, right? They're like 2.5 hours-ish after the game that goes before them. So, right, they play multiple games in one location. One game tips off, the next game tips off after that one. If the first game runs long, the lock time on DraftKings, as it just, I was thinking about this, is important to know because you may not get starting lineups. You may not get, you know, God forbid the game in front of them goes to overtime. You're not going to get any information because they're not even going to warm up by the time, right. You know, what you're hoping for, if there is any news or anything, they warm up. There's reporters there. It's the NCAA tournament. So there will be something out there. Generally on Twitter is the best source to do it. And you can get that information. But with props and stuff, I feel much more confident, you know, this weekend and over the course of the next month with the player news. But even then, you know, there are sometimes like starting lineup changes that we don't foresee coming. And that's a little bit more around the edges. You know, that would be more like Aaron Nesmith is starting over Obi Toppin situation, like from our Pacers example earlier this year, but it's not a huge deal. And then to your point, I do think the markets are really inefficient. Where I think the markets are most inefficient is actually on the really crappy underdog teams playing the absolute best teams in the country. Going back to what I was talking about, where how different the game environments are and stuff, that's also how different the talent gap is between, like, the talent gap between a 5 and a 12 is often not that much, right? Because that's like the best mid-major team in the country and like a mediocre power conference team in the country. Houston versus Longwood. Longwood wasn't the best team in like the second worst conference in the entire country, right? They are a bottom 100 team in the whole country. And Houston is one of the best with NBA athletes and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think the markets have, I don't have perfect projections either, but I don't think the markets have figured out like how much do we dock the best player on this team that is like maybe going to score 40 points.
Right.
You know what I mean? So an example of one I bet last night when it came out was Wagner won against Howard in the first four to play North Carolina, their best play game, but he was priced like kind of like a superstar in the prop market. Like his points plus rebounds plus assists was like 23.5 against North Carolina. And he was barely hitting that in the SWAC or whatever, you know, the MEAC, I think it is, that they are in. And so you can find some situations like that where the market just doesn't quite know how to price the good players on teams that are like so outrageously overmatched.
And also they may undervalue the teams that are
because they think they're going to get pulled or something like that in the
or when they're just doing it off of averages or anything like,
yeah.
Like I take a look at, not to relate it to soccer, to me these are regional qualifiers, World Cup qualifier level types of spreads.
Yeah.
Where, like, during the course of a regular college basketball season or so, like Cincinnati minus 260, San Francisco plus 225. Like, if this was NBA, like, that's like a big favorite, right? If you're minus 300, minus 350 favorite, you're a big favorite, right? Yeah. Now, like in soccer, the best Premier League team against the worst Premier League team is going to be like a minus 1,000 favorite. And they're still in the same they're still in the same league.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get to like FA Cup stuff and then international qualifiers. You're going to get Spain versus Gibraltar, and Spain is going to be a minus 35,000 favorite and have the total of the game be 8.5.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not because the game's going to be 5-4. That's because the game's going to be 9-0.
Right.
Right. So I'm taking a look at some of these spreads. It's like North Carolina is currently a minus 6,500 favorite over Wagner. And Tennessee is a minus 3,600 favorite over St. Peter's. And Connecticut is a minus 8,000 favorite over Stetson. Is Connecticut, are they ever in their conference? They're never going to be a minus 8,000 favorite over anyone, right?
No, generally, DePaul was like truly horrific, but I don't even think they were that big of a favorite against DePaul to that
point. Right, but I'm saying DePaul, if they were DePaul a big favorite, they were games. A minus 700, minus 800 right. favorite. Right,
exactly.
Right, and that's a big, so it's like if trying to price out props based on these outlier spreads. Right, so it could be the type of thing where I'm giving a little clue to a little extra edge. And this may work. This is more for the pick'em sites. Okay. I'm gonna hide it in the Roto Grinders Today show. Because you know me, I like talking about strategies, but when it comes to giving out an edge that people could exploit and then it goes away, these are exactly the situations where you wouldn't be betting these props straight. Because think of a situation where either if you're ever in a situation where you think an entire market is off for a game or anything, to put them together,
stack them up.
It's correlated. Like these are all core. This is like if the UConn numbers are too low, it's more likely that you could pick five or six of them to all go over. And you're going to hit them all. Yep. Or if you think they're way too high, that they're not accounting for the fact that UConn may not even be playing. They'll be playing their bench the last 15 minutes of the game. Like then take all the then just take them all this way. So I just in general for sports betting and these types of games, props and pick 'em, I like looking for edges like this where the whole season works in some way, right, that people are used to, that books are used to, that numbers are used to, and that there are now these outlier situations, right, where how do they price this? How does the SGP engine work, right? Normally, these would be positively correlated things. Now they're really negatively correlated things, right? And a lot of times these books don't. They just have one way of doing it the whole way through, and then you could find a way to pick these things off, right? Same example with like the World Cup versus, now obviously soccer is a much, much more bet game worldwide.
Yeah.
That type of stuff doesn't happen as much, but I mean, I still find that in soccer plenty of times where it's Man City versus Sheffield United and Man City is a minus 1600 favorite and they have not, and a certain book has not priced the...
It's just their averages, right?
Right, yeah. It's just the averages. And it's like dude,
yep. It's a print
Man
fest.
City
it's
may
amazing.
Easily get off like 32 shots this game. I don't care who the shots come from. I'm just going to take four or five of these guys all overs because they're all off, right? And if that happens, I just win even more. I win an SGP, I win more money, and I also, to the books, look more like a schmuck.
Yeah, right, right, exactly, right. Exactly. It's perfect. I win, and they don't limit me for winning because right. They're like, he's a donkey. He just got
right.
lucky.
I'm betting all these SGPs. This guy has to be an idiot, right?
Yes,
we have
yes.
A 50, we got a 15 to 20% hold on this bet, and it's like, based on my calculations, I have a 4% edge on this entire bet, and you're acting as if I'm giving you theoretical hold.
Yes, so exactly. No, I think that if people want to think about some what you just outlined on the mega favorites, I think is absolutely true. And the mega underdogs, I think is absolutely true. Your comparison was perfect. I think it's absolutely applicable to the NCAA tournament. I have taken all the one seeds to cover in the first round because that's specifically what I believe the market is wrong about, is they cannot price these awful, awful teams against these really, 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 like, these are teams full of NBA players against teams full of guys who are going to be selling life insurance next week. Like, this is like a good college team going to the YMCA and going and playing a pickup game. Like, it's a bloodbath.
The market is off across the board.
I think they're scared to price the one seeds correctly. Because of some historical precedent, but also B, because like some of the analytical models actually do not totally agree, because they also don't price these things like what I believe to be accurate. It's just my general thesis, like you said, is that I think the market is wrong about how they price these one seeds specific to the NCAA tournament. Like if they're, I think they're pricing them like they're playing in November, which is when these teams usually play, where it's like, okay, the best players aren't, you know, RJ Davis, I'll use UNC's, you know, All-American point guard. He's really only going to play like 20 minutes or 18 minutes or whatever, because it's going to be over in the first half. Let's get the walk-ons in the second half. Let's get the, you know, this is the NCAA tournament. Like, they'll be up 35 in the second half, and he's going to be out there still. Like, and then when he comes out, oh, by the way, here's a McDonald's All-American, like, backup, you know, kid that's going to play in the NBA 3 years from now is coming in behind him. And so I just think that they haven't figured out the little nuance of that. I could, of course, certainly be wrong. Houston really struggled last year in the first round. But I also think, just one little final nugget on that, college basketball has changed a lot with the transfer portal, with NIL, with these guys that are still around are the remaining players who got the extra free year of eligibility from COVID. If you were in COVID, if you're in college during COVID, you basically get to come back to school for a year and play sports for free. So these big teams have like 25-year-olds on them. Like North Carolina's team, I'm not even shitting you, North Carolina has like three dudes 24 and over in their starting lineup. Like, there are these dudes are like professional basketball players still playing college basketball. And like that, like Stetson has a couple of good players for their league, but like they don't have that. You know what I mean? Like, Wagner doesn't have the 25-year-old guy who should really be in the NBA right now. And so it's just this weird
25-year-old guy that really should be selling life insurance.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yes, exactly. He might be in the summers. He probably is during the right. summers. But it's just this like weird convergence of a bunch of different things that I probably don't exist, you know, next year or in 2 years from now. But they all happen to exist right now, to where I think the market is like kind of not figured out how to handle it.
So, Eric, we talked for almost an hour. We said before the show, I don't know if we can talk about this for an hour. That's what happens when we both get on a show. I'm assuming you're going to be doing some content every week for what's going on with the, like I said, I don't play college basketball DFS. I pretty much don't like handicap or bet. What is Roto Grinders scores and odds? What is everyone? What's the landscape of the free content, premium content, all the offerings that we've got here for college basketball?
I will say I'm going to defer to I'm not exactly sure on the free versus premium, but I do know that there are there is a lot of content going on. Shout out to the team. Like we talked about a lot, Tuttle is doing DFS projections for every slate during the NCAA tournament. He's also did projections like for the first four. There's a slate tonight as an example, which includes NIT games and stuff. So shout out to Tuttle for you want to talk about the news thing that you were talking about where you don't know. Now imagine a meaningless postseason game where these guys are you really have no idea if they're playing, right? It's like the bowl games for college football. Who the hell knows who's going to play? But the projections are awesome. And within Lineup HQ, Tuttle, myself, and Varnkiss will be doing tags. So I have some tags out there under the, I think, expert or RG or something like that. Anyway, in Lineup HQ, I have tags. So like our top plays, a lot of the times, of course, they will align with projections. Sometimes they maybe not because something isn't factored into the projections that we see. Scores and odds. I already have a billion first round picks out there. If you go to scoresandodds.com, there's a team of us putting out our favorite picks in the tournament. Though that'll be all the way through the end of the national. There you go. I agree. Actually, the RG people have been crushing the last week or so in college basketball. And then yeah, I actually would just highly recommend that article that you pulled up there, the tips and predictions from our experts. It's myself, Varnkiss, Luch, and Jordan Case, just kind of breaking down like a ton of different angles, our favorite angles to the tournament. So there's a lot. There is a ton of stuff out there. You can get brackets, DFS, picks, everything.
And if you want to become a premium member here at Roto Grinders, click on that link in the description. Get $10 off your first month. Hit that thumbs up button on your way out the door. Hit the subscribe button if you're new here. Hit the notification bell to know always when we go live. We got NBA slate later today. Grinders live. Crunch time. I'll be back tomorrow. Probably NHL, maybe NHL, NBA. Baseball's coming back. I mean, I know baseball's going on in Korea, but I don't even know what happened. I think the Dodgers won. The two games in before the whatever. We got projections for that also, so feel free to come on by for that. Join the Discord, rotogrinders.com/Discord. Most of the channels there are free. So join that up, and I'll be back tomorrow talking about all things you're thinking about. Daily fantasy, props, and pick 'em on Roto Grinders today.